From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to WSSU Future Focus. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor Elwood Robinson.
Tonight we begin with the Ronnie Long story. Mr. Ronnie Wallace Long. He was imprisoned for almost 44 years after an all-white jury convicted him of rape and burglary based on witness testimony and scant physical evidence. In 1976, he was convicted of breaking into the home of a Cannon Mills executive widow. The prosecution presented no blood, hair, paint, fiber, fingerprints, or semen linking him to the crime. A rape conviction carried a mandatory death penalty sentence at the time. But a U.S. Supreme Court decision changed the maximum sentence to life in prison. Long was sentenced in September 1976 to two concurrent life sentences that were later reduced to 80 years total. We have Mr. Long here with us tonight, and you will hear from him in a moment. Last September, I submitted a letter to the UNC Board of Governors nominating Dr. Denise Nation for the Governor James H. Holzhauser Award for Excellence in Public Service. My nomination was based in part on her work with the Ronnie Long Project, where she worked to infuse in a deliberate manner social justice activism within the curriculum of the Justice Studies degree program at Winston-Salem State University. While initially intended to impact her own academic department, this six-year project evolved to engage faculty and students from other disciplines and departments. Dr. Nation's desire to integrate this case into the Justice Studies curriculum to provide WSSU students with real-world experiences to address social justices in our community. But this case evolved as her personal passion that really ignited and inspired her teaching, scholarship, and engaged activities. Because of her personal investment in this project, WSSU students and faculty over the last 6 years became advocates and activists. Most importantly, Mr. Ronnie Long was released on August 27, 2020, because of the sustained, continuous commitment by Dr. Nation and our various faculty and students who worked tirelessly on this issue to support Mr. Long's legal team. On December the 17th, 2020, Governor Roy Cooper issued a pardon of innocence for him. My next guest is Dr. Jack Monell, is an inspiring example of how education can change someone's life and the community around him. But this is not how life started for him. After the death of his father, he found himself in a juvenile detention facility. Long before he made his life in Winston-Salem, he grew up in public housing in New York City without the presence of his father because he struggled with drug addiction and got into trouble with the law. Manel was 15 when his father died, and then things spiraled out of control. He said, "Unfortunately, the streets had more of a gravitational pull as far as my behavior went, and because of that, I engaged in juvenile delinquent activities that ultimately changed the course of my life." He explained he was in a juvenile detention center in upstate New York from 15 to 19 years old, but a counselor noticed how sharp he was and encouraged him to go to college. He says, "There's always retribution. There's always redemption. And for me, education was that redemption. Education saved my life." Jack Monell emphasized, he got his bachelor's degree from Towson State University and then went on to get a master's degree at Howard University and a PhD from Walden University. Now he is a Justice Studies professor at Winston-Salem State University, where he is trying to help students become the best version of themselves and give back to the community. Ladies and gentlemen, members of our audience tonight, it is my pleasure to welcome you to a very special Future Focus Now. We are honored to have as our guest, our featured guest tonight, Mr. Ronnie Long. Mr. Ronnie Long, how are you?
I'm okay. First and foremost, I give praise and honor to the most merciful creator for allowing me this opportunity to be able to be a part of this program. I also want to thank Winston-Salem State, Dr. Nation. I learned of Dr. Nation through my wife. She sent me a photo of her. I believe the dude's name was Banks. He was supposed to be some NFL football player. And Dr. Nation, they wearing my gear and then standing in front of the governor's mansion. When I see this picture, this is when I become familiar with the name Dr. Nation. Mm-hmm. Since I've known Dr. Nation has become a key element in a process that involved a lot of people. Also, Dr. Monell. When I was in behind the fence, they allowed me the opportunity to speak about my injustice to their classes. It's a lot of students at Winston-Salem State wrote me concerning what had happened to me. But getting back to Dr. Nation, Dr. Monell, I learned about Dr. Nation, and like I say, Dr. Nation and my wife, they more or less like affiliated with one another because they keep in touch with one another. She tell me about Dr. Nation, and I understand Dr. Nation's connection with the university. I also, you understand, saying I'm pleased, you understand, saying for you to have me and be a part of your panel.
No, we are delighted. We know in terms of your life is historic. Your life story is one that people need to hear about. And I'm honored that you took a minute to begin to come on Future Focus Now at Winston-Salem State University and talk a little bit about your life story. We're not going to overburden you with all the details, but we're just glad to have you. I want to just ask you, I mean, I've seen a number of interviews. I saw you on CBS and I saw you on some other interviews, and you talked about, you know, once you were here and you were not in prison anymore, there were things that you wanted to do. I want to ask you what the last 6 months has been like for you.
I mean, it's a learning process, man. It's a learning process. I mean, you know, you look at things in 2020, 2021, I mean, compared to 76, I mean, like when I, like I say, when I left the street, man, you understand, said they were driving 65. They were driving 65 on in and out, like you didn't have to worry about, but I mean, two cars going south, two lane going north, they driving 65. So you ain't got to worry about nobody, but so whoever's on your left or whoever's on your right, now they driving 80. You got to worry about who on your right and left because they got four and five lanes. I mean, hey, listen. That's how life done progress.
Yeah.
It'll progress to the point to where you understand saying, hey, now I didn't know that you could talk to a telephone and the telephone do whatever you tell it to do. Cut the TV on, telephone, cut the TV on. Cut the lights out, telephone, cut the lights out. Who at the front door? Telephone tell you who at the front door. I mean, you understand, saying that's how life going to progress. But like I say, it's a learning process. I get praise and honor to a creator, and I feel it though, you understand, saying he ain't brought me this far. to forget me and my call. I got people that are more or less like still a part of my call. Just because I'm out of the penitentiary doesn't mean, you understand, saying that I'm easy selling and I can live this productive life as a citizen that they feel as though, you understand, saying people coming out of the penitentiary should live. Number one, first you got to prepare me for what's out in society. You living in a system where they don't give a damn whether you know anything or not. That's why they come up with what they call the Structured Sentencing Act. The Structured Sentencing Act in the state of North Carolina means that you have to serve 85% of your sentence. So if they give you 10 years, that means you got to bring 8.5 to the door. And the reason they say the stiffer sentencing, harsher sentences, you understand, because they need somebody that's inside those institutions. That's how the 9 to 1,000 men ain't no more tobacco and cotton in North Carolina. Yeah. Tobacco and cotton is gone south for the border. It's being manufactured there, shipped back. North Carolina has got to find a means and an avenue to make money. So North Carolina make their money on mass incarceration. Mass incarceration is very lucrative and it do not pollute. Understand that. Hmm. Cotton mills and tobacco mills, they pollute. Hmm. Institutions don't pollute. So they're going to be around for a while.
You look like you're preaching a little bit there, Mr. Long. I'm kind of enjoying this. Let me ask you, like we talk about the last 6 months of freedom. What does freedom mean to you? I heard you interview talk about what it meant to you, but it also, you said it meant a lot to your parents. So take us through the whole notion of what freedom means.
I mean, you know, and I know both. You look back over the history of people of color. You have never, ever, ever actually been free. That all men are born equally. America, home of the brave, land of the free. The hell did they write that for? Who the hell did they write that for? Because number one, if the Constitution stands as a law to govern the people, you know what the fuck? It take me 44 years. You can bleep that.
No, I don't need to bleep that.
The United States is built on the constitutions. Then why did it take me 44 years? To prove that my 5th and 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution have been violated. What needs to happen? You need to pray. You need to get on your knees. Your honor and prayer to those that have that compassionate heart for other people. You have people out there in life, you understand, saying that understand the injustice because number one, I know that the Underground Railroad could have never, ever, ever, ever been established if it don't be for the help or some Caucasian, white, Quaker, European people. I know for a fact that when my great-great-great-grandmother was out there in that cotton field picking cotton, there was a white person out there in that cotton field too. So you have whites, you understand, saying that they've been victimized by the system as well, so it's blacks. So when we talk about white supremacy, we're talking about a special class of people. A special class of people that feel as though color is a sixth essential element in determining whether a man is a man or a woman is a woman. The thing, black, white, blue, gray, and yellow, the color line was established in 1747 by two Nazi supremacists. One named H.S. Chamberlain, the other named Joanne Blumenbach, who felt that there should be a supreme race. And that thing has been going on because people were not recognized by the color of their skin. In the ancient day, people were recognized by the city that they constructed. If you built Rome and you live in Rome, you're a Roman. If you built Egypt and you live in Egypt, you're an Egyptian. If you built Ethiopia and you live in Ethiopia, you're an Ethiopian. So this supremacy, racism thing, it's an ongoing thing. It's a disease. It's a disease.
Well, look, well said, Mr. Long. I mean, you're preaching. You're preaching. We're going to come back in terms of talk a little bit more about you, but now I want to connect you because you began talking about Winston-Salem State and Dr. Nation. I want to bring Dr. Nation into the conversation because, as you heard, last summer, I presented you to the Board of Governors for the Holzhauser Award, primarily because of your work here, but other work that you've done. Dr. Nation, take us through the Ronnie Long Project, how it came about, and then how it was sustained over the years. Dr. Jack, I always call him Dr. Jack, we'll get to you in just a moment. Dr. Nation, take us through your association with Mr. Long.
Yeah, so back in 2014, the summer of 2014, I was actually looking to, because we had revamped the justice studies curriculum, because I was just concerned about how punitive our students were. And I wanted some type of action project that would be more impactful to students versus just, you know, just the regular textbooks and articles, so on and so forth. I was just brainstorming, how do I change their perspective? How do I make an impact on them? How do I move our justice studies students to be students of justice and versus this punitive notion that they had? And so we reconsidered, we reimagined the curriculum in 2014, going into 2015. And so I was searching around, doing research over the summer, wondering, like, how could I do this? How could I touch all justice studies students? Because obviously I don't teach all the classes. And I was a coordinator at the time of the program. So I was a coordinator when we revamped it to have a social justice focus. So we had a concentration in social justice. And so so that would be the fall of 2014 would be when this new curriculum would start. And so I did some research, read the pedagogy literature on social justice and teaching social justice, and came up with the idea that we could infuse a particular case across the entire curriculum and have students have more of an action-focused curriculum than, you know, something that was so passive. And at this time, I've been at the university about 6 or 7 years. So I had just gotten tenured, so I had a little leeway to do a whole bunch of different things. I wasn't running around trying to get published and just thinking about getting to tenure. So now I could get creative. Now I could really focus on the students. Now I could really think about what are we really doing here in this program? And the program was growing, you know, was really growing versus when I, you know, entered, when I started. So, so now I'm thinking an entire project to involve the entire major. And so the action plan based on, you know, some of the research I've done, I'm like, let's have them help people. And that's how I started. I started just searching for cases. And I was on the Innocence Project website and I saw Ashley's post. And I remember, I mean, it's been years, but I remember something that stood out to me when she said, suppose this was your brother, suppose this was your father. And that part of her post, and I started reading, you know, what she's been posting on the website. So I contacted her because it was Concord. It was up the street. It was an hour away from us. And I'm like, this is the ideal project. But obviously, I wanted something that the students could believe in. And the students believe in innocence. And so I was going to search for a case like that. And that's what I found with Ronnie. I contacted her. I did a little background research and I contacted her and said, you know, send me the docs, you know, let me look at this. And, you know, I did 1 year law school, so I wasn't really, you know, but I could read, you know, I didn't find them to be particularly boring. And once I started going through the document, I was just floored. It was just amazing that this thing could happen to someone. And I knew instantly that, he was innocent. And so, you know, I kind of hashed out a plan over the summer, asked all the faculty that I'm going to start this run-along project in my justice administration class. And I'd like folks to come along. And I didn't really have a big picture of what I wanted to do that particular first semester, but I went with it. And the students went with me. And the students did a whole bunch of different things in that class. You know, they, you know, wrote poems. We had Twitter Tuesdays and Thursdays because it was a Tuesday, Thursday class. So we had Twitter for Tuesday, Thursdays. We have a rap song from those. They started, we had a letter campaign. Ashley would come into the class and speak to the students. Ronnie would call in. And then it started to spread. Every semester, I asked more. I hired someone. I hired Dr. McDowell. I said, you have to be part of the project. This is just something we do in the major. And everyone that we hire, you know, they have to incorporate the project somehow in their various courses. And that's what we started to do. Every single course, we could find some way to infuse the project. And so they created you know, Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, so on and so forth. So the students did so much and they were enthusiastic. And one of the point I made when we're assigning this to students, we're saying, you can work on an alternative assignment when you hear this stuff, if you read this material and you don't believe in his innocence, you can opt out. We have never had a student over the last 6 years opt out. And so we run what, Jack, 13, 14 sections, you know, a year with 40 or so students. This is how many students, hundreds of students over the last 6 years that have been engaged in this project. And as you said, Chancellor, I started to do different like cross-teaching and Jack started to cross-teach with other disciplines. So the psychology students got involved. Then Larry Little and his political science students started getting involved. And it just went from there. The political science, so was it Mona Zaire at that time? But a lot of political science students would be in charge of student government. And so we got students government involved as well. So student government led marches. And of course, you know, we brought all these kids to the Fourth Circuit for his first hearing. And, you know, the courtroom was so packed, they were just shocked. Like, we've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, I mean, this is, so, look, Dr. Nash, this is amazing, and I can tell your excitement about how this came about. I'm going to come back to you a little bit for some particulars. I want Jack, because when you think about doing something of this magnitude, it's rare that you see it on a college campus. I want Jack to tell our viewers how this is possible at an institution. A little bit about the history, Jack, you know, social justice at Winston-Salem State, our motto, enter to learn, depart to serve. Put this in context for our listeners and our viewers in terms of how something like this is possible and could happen at Winston-Salem State University.
Absolutely, Chancellor. So as you stated, historically, our institution was founded on the premise that, you know, we would not only be educators, but we would give back to our community upon graduation. So everything we've done since its founding has been incorporating social justice before social justice was a trendy word. So for us, it was an easy sell and adaptation, more importantly. And we cannot, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't highlight the fact that, of course, we're a historically Black college and university. And when we look at HBCUs across the nation, all of our, you know, missions correlate into social justice, social activism, and ensuring that we speak out for those whose voices oftentimes go unheard. So here, you know, I arrived to Winston-Salem State in 2011, and obviously that was one of, you know, my yearnings. I wanted to be at an institution that focused on social justice, you know, not that, you know, we're justice professors, not the traditional criminal justice kind of curriculum as Dr. Nation alluded to, you know, but she had the foresight to revamp it and expand on it so that our students had more opportunities. And I don't mean justice students, I mean, and all of our students, because quite frankly, we have students from nursing, we have students from biology, we have students across the disciplines that appreciate and see the value in what we do, but more importantly, what our students do. And the Ronnie Long Project is a testament. I mean, it's incredibly, for me, it is an emotional moment, because like you said, it's something that I could have never fathomed in my career. Denise and I always joke about this. Like, this is stuff sometimes you may read in a textbook years later, but we are a part of history. And thankfully for Ronnie Long, he is free. And students who have cried when we got the disappointing news the first time at the Fourth Circuit, because all of their hard work, and then to see us tweeting and still fighting, and Ronnie still remaining, you know, resilient and inspiring. Because every time he spoke to our classes, I mean, them kids was like in tears and all, and it lit the fire. I mean, Denise and I, we just were like coaches. Right. I mean, these students were just, they were like, put me in, coach, because we want to help this man. This is such a miscarriage of justice. So it was an easy sell. And I do applaud, you know, WSSU, our administration, our colleagues in our department and across the university, because once it took off, there was no stopping. And until Ronnie was free, them students weren't giving up. I guess it's a good thing. But, you know, sadly, we still have many more Ronnie Longs to fight for. So, you know, we're incredibly grateful the brothers free. You know, we have a history in our department of helping brothers get free. Calvin Michael Smith, which was occurring simultaneous with Ronnie Long. And then, of course, Daryl Hunt, which, you know, our colleague Dr. Larry Little was a part of. So, you know, this is not unique to our department. It's not unique to our university's mission to ensure that we are balancing the scales of justice. So for me, I'm just privileged and humbled to be a part of a great team, and thankful for Dr. Nation for her foresight once again, because, I mean, she spearheaded this and kind of motivated us to say, let's think outside of the box. Yeah. You know, let's break that box down and let's expose our students to real high impact practices that involves making change in our society.
That's great. Give me some idea of how far reaching this project is. I've read somewhere, and you guys just said there's so many students have been involved in the project. Give me some idea of how many students we're talking about, and can you look at one or two students that kind of were part of this project, and now they've gone on and this has launched their careers? Tell me a little bit about the overall magnitude of how many students, Dr. Nation, would you say have gone participated in this project?
Oh man. Wow. I you know, at this moment when I'm running the numbers through my head, you know, when I do interviews, I'm like saying hundreds, but it's really thousands, because we've been at this for 6 years. And we have consistently done it. We hadn't taken any time off at all. You know, there were lapses when we were waiting for the Fourth Circuit. But I'll tell you this, I presented some years back with some exchange students who they were in my intro to forensics class, but they were exchange students from University of London. And they wrote a blog, and we presented the case at a conference and a national conference, and those two students went back, you know, to their home university in London, and you know, and continued the work around social justice itself, you know, to look at what was going on in the UK. So, you know, we have many, many students who have basically gone through our program, still always, you know, coming back, asking about the project, asking about Ronnie, you know, pointing out how, you know, something like this has changed their perspective. And the message that I always send to students, I first interviewed at a school that told me that we're not here to, you know, educate students to be police officers. But some of these students who actually, and I didn't like that, because we all we have to be inside all these institutions as people, as people of color. And a lot of our students have also gone on to that public service. We stress that public service. And I also always stress to students, I want you to go work for the government. You're not going to make a lot of money, but you're going to get a lot of satisfaction. You have to give back to your community. And if you look at where our students are now, you know, I was running the other morning downtown, and I ran into a couple of our students who are working at Child Protective Services. That's not a path that they even thought about before. They just wanted to kind of be in the juvenile justice system. But, you know, in us working with social work students in this project, they understood that they didn't need a social work degree to work with children in CPS. So, I mean, we've had so much impact, and it's changed student perspective. And that's why I want to find another project and continue it, because it is very instrumental and it's very important. Jack? Yeah,
fantastic along those lines. I'm curious in terms of, you talked a while back about the project, and you said a couple times you would have Mr. Long call in. How did you arrange that? And I'm curious as to what the conversation was like when he called in.
Not a couple of times. He called
like
in
every time.
He called in every semester to all these classes. Every semester to all these classes, multiple times per semester to the classes. Yeah.
Chancellor, you gotta remember, you know, many of these students, particularly our local ones, I mean, their parents or their grandparents knew were there when this occurred to Ronnie. So it really hit home. I mean, our very own Dr. White in City, she's from Concord, and she remembers this case vividly growing up. So, you know, that Ronnie called it. I mean, you got to figure. I mean, you know, I mean, you know, we're a very popular major. We offer many classes throughout the semester. He called every time, and it was simple technology, nothing special. You know, his wife would come, she would give a presentation. And then Ronnie would call in, and Ronnie would dazzle any of the classes, because, you know, he's charismatic, and, you know, students would just, I mean, honestly, you know, students were like in tears when he'd be done. Mm-hmm. So, and then word of mouth. So then students would tell other students,
yes.
Hey, did you hear Ronnie in class yesterday? Oh, you missed class. You were in the breezeway. You know, whatever the case may be. You know, so it became, I mean, almost like urban legend, but it was real,
right.
You know, because, you know, here's this figure, Ronnie, who I mean, the whole university was like, everybody was rooting, because we all knew this incredible miscarriage of justice. So everybody was invested in ensuring that we were supported. SGA supported us, administration supported us oftentimes when we did these, protests or trips to the courts, you know, so that part, it was a holistic approach. So when we talk about education, education is not just what's in a textbook. It's not what occurs in a classroom. It's that holistic approach to providing our students with real world experiences so that they can correlate and understand the theories that Dr. Nation and I bombard them with, too.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to the best lawyer in the country.
That's Jamie right.
Law from Duke.
Yes, sir. Yes, yeah. Yes.
So Jamie came and spoke to classes as well. But, students have met Jamie, obviously. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little about the lawyer and how he interacted or interfaced with the project.
Jamie, Ronnie, you want to jump in about Jamie?
Hey, like I said, I found out about Dr. Nation through my wife. I was at a point in this struggle where I was at a dead standstill. Mind you, I done discovered that these people will hell. I mean, exploratory evidence that they did it, but I didn't see that was something that was orchestrated. Anyway, all between lawyers. Here come my wife, a white woman. Black man in the penitentiary raping a white woman. Oh, prestigious, influential white woman. Now here comes this little white girl. She sent me a letter. I'm reading the letter. She done read some of my documents, the injustice that was done to you. I don't feel as though it's right. I'm gonna do what I can to help you. Now I'm thinking, white woman, what is this a setup? What the state trying to do? Cut me off? She want an application. She come to see me. We talk. Boom. I see her. I feel her energy. I feel her energy. I feel her enthusiasm. I might be able. I'm in a position where I ain't got no lawyer. Been in the penitentiary over 30 years. Pleading, appeal after appeal, and getting denied. Now here come a white woman. Won't help me. Now what am I supposed to say? White woman, get away from me. I don't want your help. I'm mad, so what do you think I said?
I think you said I'll take your help. that's the way I look at it, Jack.
It's more to this story. She started marketing my name.
Yeah.
Across the internet. This woman took my name, put it on hats, shirts, sweatpants, shoes, postcards, ID cards, bumper stickers. She introduced me to a lot of pictures, Dr. Nation. The exposure that I needed was manufactured through my association with my wife, who wasn't, I don't think she was my wife then. And her connections with Dr. Nation, Dr. Monell, and Winston-Salem State. Now understand, it was a collective effort. Through their exposure, I get a letter from Duke Wrongful Conviction Clinic. Now, mind you, before I get the letter from Duke Wrongful Conviction Clinic, I had lawyers telling me that it was futile for me to go to the Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit is the second highest court in the United States. It's 15 judges on the Fourth Circuit. The old case went to the North Carolina Supreme Court. And it's 7 judges in there. And it ended up in a 3-3 tie. How the hell do a case with 7 judges end up in a 3-3 tie? What happened to the 7th judge? Yeah, what did he do? He retired without making a decision. So North Carolina knew that if North Carolina Supreme Court don't reach a decision, then the lower court decision stands. So I'm stuck with that conviction that I got out of Cabarrus County. Lawyers telling me, you done come to the end of your road. Here come Duke Wrongful Conviction Clinic. Some exposure that was given to me for my wife was in Salem State and collected efforts. Telling me he wasn't gonna make no, telling me he wasn't gonna make me no promises. This man took me from the blessings of the Creator who brought me that white woman that's my wife. She marketed my name until Duke Wrongful Conviction Clinic came to see me. I'm not gonna make you no promises, but I'm gonna see what I can do for you. He took me through the Fourth Circuit twice. I wish I had the tapes where you could hear the opinion of the first time my case went before a 3-judge panel. 2 white males, 1 white female. The one of the white males was appointed to the Fourth Circuit by Donald Trump. He was from South Carolina. But that's another chapter. We ain't gonna even get into that.
Yes, another chapter.
We already know. You understand?
I'm sure, I'm sure you got a lot of chapters. That's why we're glad we had you on the show, because of a lot of chapters. Let me get to a couple of things before we end the show, because I want to talk about what Governor Cooper did. So Jack, take us through what happened to Mr. Long. So he is released from prison, and then what happens after he's released, and why was it necessary for the governor to pardon him? And what does a governor's pardon mean? I'm reading here the pardon. It says that it being a pardon of innocence. What does that mean?
Quite frankly, it's an affirmation of his innocence and a miscarriage of what occurred in Cabarrus County in 1976, first and foremost. Secondly, what it means is that Ronnie is now due, compensation from the state of North Carolina, which he so deserves. And finally, it means that, he can begin, once again, as he stated, working towards just reintegrating, right? Becoming accustomed to this new environment he's in. So, it's an affirmation of his innocence, which he always stated. So for the governor to finally do that, it's important for Ronnie. It's important for his family so that he can move forward, ultimately with a clean slate and get what's due to him by the state of North Carolina.
Even though
I commend the governor, and in the letter that I wrote to the governor, You know, I appeal to the Christian nature of the governor, but come on, for the last 6-7 years, you know, no one did anything. So we had letter writing campaign to the governor, the students, you know, hundreds of letter. So we had letter writing to, who was the governor before this one? Pat McCrory.
McCrory, yeah.
McCrory, we thought maybe that was a dead end, but, you know, you still had to try. And we also, you know, wrote to this governor. I mean, we went to protest at the state's attorney's office. He sent his chief of staff to talk to the students, but, you know, he didn't meet with us, but they brought us inside and tried to discuss some stuff. But, I mean, when leaders see miscarriage of justice, they should not put their political career or anything above that. And that's what I mean. I'm totally disappointed in some of the organization here, especially the NAACP, you know? And so now we have Reverend Spearman, and he's a good guy. But I'm like, all these years, they ignored Ronnie. And we must not let things like this happen, because we have many, many, many more Ronnie Longs that we must work on getting freed. And politicians, leaders must be strong, and they must have integrity to understand that injustice to one person in the criminal justice system is injustice to all in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, well said. I'm wondering, Jack, if you could put a bow on this for us in terms of this show. What does the Ronnie Long Project, and what does having Mr. Ronnie Long on our show today, what does it tell us about where we are as a people, where we are in the criminal justice system? We know that 2020 was such a year in which the light was shined on so many inequities around race and so forth. Put a bow on this for us. What does this mean, and about what does this tell us about who we are?
Well, quite frankly, it should be no surprise that there are two systems, clearly. You know, particularly when we look at the criminal justice system, you know, there's a system that benefits the dominant culture, the powerful culture, the social elite. And then you have the criminal justice that punishes everyone else, particularly, you know, Black and brown folks in urban communities or poorer communities. Having Ronnie Long, listen, the Ronnie Long Project is, as we see it, as Dr. Nation and I see it, I mean, he's embedded into our curriculum still. I mean, he's a part. Much of our success with our students and really engaging with them, quite frankly, is due to Ronnie Long himself. And Ronnie Long still speaks to them, still, you know, we're in COVID now, but, you know, still, you know, visits the campus. He's still available to students, and, you know, and many have reached out to him because of that. So quite frankly, what we would hope your viewers would see and understand and realize is that, as Dr. Nation stated, leaders should have the courage, and for many who profess to be religious, should really operate on those principles, because there's no way that this man who served over 44 years in prison, you know, that in itself, I mean, he served two life sentences by North Carolina standards. It's just it's an incredible miscarriage of justice. Secondly, always remember that at our institution, specifically in our program, we're always going to speak out for the little guy. We're always going to fight. And for, you know, of course, I'm always going to big up the school. You know, for those of you, if you really want to gain an education that provides you the foundational preparation to change lives, to really change lives, for real, like the youngins say, then definitely look at good old State U, because we continue to fight for those who voices oftentimes go unheard.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. Mr. Long, we're almost out of time. Going to give you some last words. What are you looking most forward to for the future?
I mean, then again, you understand, saying first and foremost, you got to give praise to the creator, because number one, the only thing you have is what's here now. Anything after that, you understand, saying you need to ask permission if it be the will of God. If it be the will of God, I'm hoping that I can live a comfortable life because I've yet to be compensated from the state. I'm still living on donations that are donated to my GoFundMe page. You got people that injustice is going to be in, but I want to say this to the younger mind. It's going to take people like you who are in positions to educate yourself, because I say education is the key to opportunity. Opportunity is the door that when your professions, your careers, and your vocations are built upon. North Carolina criminal justice system right now is corrupt and toxic. They did, you can bleep this, they did until my case went to the Fourth Circuit. Ain't no North Carolina state court honored the constitutions and the violations that was in my case. I want to encourage those that's in the criminal justice system, I want to encourage those who have a compassionate heart to believe in yourself and always strive to be the best, whatever it is you can be. Sometimes we got to get knocked down to get back up. Thank you. I love you. Appreciate you having me here.
Well said, Mr. Long. We appreciate you taking time to be on Future Focus. Now, that's what we do. We try to tell the word, and you have told the word tonight. I appreciate the faculty, Dr. Jack, Dr. Denise. See, I call him Dr. Jack, so I have to call you Dr. Denise, but I appreciate the work that you do every day. You make us all proud of the amazing work that happens at Winston-Salem State University every day. And you are a true trooper, so I appreciate that. Everybody, we wanted to put this show together. We wanted to get it on during Black History Month. We were able to make that arrangement. Thanks for making time for that. Everyone, have a great night, and join us once again next week for another edition of Future Focus Now.